Hello and welcome to the No Name Ever podcast. I'm Jamie Smith. Joining me this week, Natalie and Liam, who you may know as Vizzy off YouTube. Just like the team, a lot of our members are on the beach at the moment. Kev and James both on holiday, so we've drafted in Liam to fill in. It's going to be a slightly shorter podcast than normal, especially after last week's Mammoth Live edition. Thanks again to everyone who came to that. And a quick mention as well before we get started to our charity partner, Claritin Brew. You can find their website at claritinbrew.org. They do a lot of good work with mental health awareness, support group essentially for Burnley fans. Please do check out their website and go along to a meeting if you would find that useful. We'll start with the Bournemouth game though. Natalie, last away game of the season and a familiar story again, 14th away defeat of the season. 14 away defeats. That's incredible.
It's ridiculous, isn't it? It really is. But it was quite lucky, really, that we were already safe by that point and we'd hit the 40-point mark, just because it was just, everyone was just like, well, obviously we lost. Like, why wouldn't we lose again away from home? I think a few fans were expecting a bit of a upstart after the Palace game and thought we were going to go ahead and beat Bournemouth as well. But, I mean, to be honest, the game had a very flat feel to it, and I think it was quite a big ask for the players to up their game again after that West Brom game at home, and also that Palace win as well, especially when it was coming to the business end of the season and there was quite a lot of pressure on those players. I'll forgive them for having a slightly flat performance. It would have been lovely to sign off with another win and to finish the season strongly, but as I'm sure we'll come on to in a minute, it did have, unfortunately, a very end of season on the beach feel to it. But you know what? That's great, because we do it for the first time in our Premier League history. We had absolutely nothing really to play for, and for a good reason. It was like we weren't fighting for our lives or already relegated. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, like you say, not that much of a spectacle. I don't want to like write it off though and say that the game didn't matter too much, because a lot of people went a long way. Liam, you went an especially long way from Newcastle to go to the game. What did you make of Burnley's performance?
To be fair, I just went down for a laugh, in honesty. Like, I just went down. I'm a laugh with my mates down in South Coast of England. Maybe your happy days. I just wanted at least a draw. Yeah, I thought that was like a 1-1. That was like my prediction for it. But to be fair, we probably could have lost the game like 5-1. Like, don't know how it was only 2-1. Don't even know how he scored. In honesty, it was like that second half. Jesus Christ! But the thing is, we were still chanting the entire time, and that's the best part about it. Even though the actual performance was terrible. But not terrible, but it just wasn't as usual. It was still an absolute laugh that day, so I enjoyed it.
Yeah, Burnley not really at the race in the second half. I think Dash said the players looked tired. We touched on that already, Natalie, but it's understandable. I suppose with so many fewer games, like 10 less games this season, you maybe go, that doesn't make sense, but the games are much more intense and with the pressure that's on them.
Yeah, they are.
And last season we were dominating teams a lot of the time, so it's totally different, and it's understandable that energy levels were running a bit low.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. Like you say, it's a very different kind of game that they're playing, so their bodies will react after a 90-minute Premier League game completely differently as they will do in a 90-minute Championship game. We've also heard as well in previous seasons Dyche talk about the benefit of the number of games in the Championship, in that it keeps your players fit. They actually really relish having Tuesday, Saturday games, because we have a side that prides itself on its fitness levels and their ability to literally look like they've not broken into a sweat by the end of the 90 minutes. And they do, like I say, they have said in previous campaigns that they really like the intensity of the Championship, because it just keeps you ticking on and you find you're fitter after that. So in some respects, even though you play less games in the Premier League, that can sometimes work as a disadvantage to you, especially with internationals and there is a long break. You know, you're having to try and maintain that match fit intensity and the real sharpness when you can have essentially 10 days without a game. So I can understand why Dyche thinks that they are tired, and add on top of that the pressure from a Premier League season and the adrenaline that they must have had when they realised after the West Brom and Palace games that they were safe. There would have been a mental tiredness as well as a physical tiredness. But to be honest, I didn't think they did too badly in the first half. And actually, whilst we created absolutely nothing in the second half, which is a fundamental problem that we're experiencing away from home, I actually thought we did all right in the first half. I've seen quite a lot of really harsh criticism for Scott Arfield in particular. I'd probably his worst game as in a Burnley shirt. But actually, he was probably the only one who created the most chances, and he had a couple of really like dangerous shots on target, which could have easily have gone in if the ball had bounced slightly. You know, we're talking inches to the either side of the keeper. He could have found that he'd scored himself a couple of goals. So, like you say, Jamie, I agree with you. I'm not writing off the game completely, and I think that first half they did all right. I just think by the second half they'd completely run out of steam and had no answer to a very strong and very competent Bournemouth side.
Yeah, Arfield's a funny one for that game, I think, because he had a lot more efforts than we usually see. Like, often Arfield might have one or two shots in a game and that's it, but he had a lot against Bournemouth. The problem was that he didn't make the most of them. I think there were a couple that were very close, they just went wide, but he maybe should have done a little bit better with them. And when you have a lot of shots, people then go, well, you should have scored. But if you don't have the shots, people don't say that. So, yeah, difficult to assess Arfield on that one. I've got to mention Juni Stanislas, of course. For once, I've got a legitimate reason to mention Juni Stanislas. Scored the opening goal. It was great for me to see a winger that gets the ball and does something in attack rather than just running up and down the channels. And a winger had an impact for us as well, Liam, at the end. Goodmanson came on and created the goal for Sam Vogt.
Yeah, I've been raving about Goodmanson the entire season. I know how good he actually is. To be fair, like, when I was watching the game, I thought you were Brady at the moment. It was on his left foot. I realised after it was actually Goodmanson. But I don't know. Speaking of wingers, we really do need to try and get like an actual direct winger in the summer. If I want anyone, I would want an actual direct winger. And I don't know who, because I'm useless. But there must be a winger out there that we need to try and get in that's at least stable. Like we were trying to get Kuzicki. He would have been perfect in our team. I want someone that can actually attack other than they can run a lot. Like Arfield, avoid. They're funny ones.
It's just fitness.
I think it's Goodmanson as well.
He
yeah.
needs to get fit and get a run in the team, I think.
Injuries as well, hasn't he?
Yeah, it's been quite unfortunate. I mean, we even played like Defoe the wings. Like, I don't know what was the point of that, to be fair. Speaking of Defoe, no idea what's going to happen with him this summer. It's going to be really interesting what happens with him.
He's going. Yeah, bye-bye. I will be amazed if he's still in a Burnley shirt, which is such a disappointment because I just feel like we have not used him to his full potential. I feel like it's been a massively wasted opportunity this season. But at the end of the day, if the reports are true, what we've been led to believe, that he has got a huge attitude problem and he doesn't get along with Dyche, then he's better off out of the club. If you have a look, and one of the things I'll come on to shortly, we have got a team of real fighters, and it's a very, very close-knit team, and especially since they've been under Dyche, whether it's been the Championship squad, the title-winning squad, or the Premier League squads, they've always been incredibly close-knit. And Defoe, even when you saw him last night at the awards, it just seemed like an outsider looking in. It just doesn't seem like he wants to be part of that group, and that for me is going to do more damage than good. So if that's the case, then he's going to have to go, I think.
It's difficult, isn't it? I mean, I'm not saying this is necessarily what I think, playing devil's advocate a little bit, but Dyche spent a lot of energy to bring Defoe to the club, and if he's not got himself involved in the group, that's one thing, but people say a lot about overseas players not really acclimatising at Burnley, and it makes me wonder if it's something at the club as well. It's just difficult for them to adapt. I mean, Goodmanson's probably done as well as anyone, but he was already in English football. When we sign players from overseas, it never seems to work out. It's easy to make excuses for each one on a case-by-case basis, but it just makes me wonder if there's enough being done to help these lads settle in. I don't know.
What I found more interesting is that when Vokes actually scored the goal against Bournemouth to make it 1-1, that when the camera panel over to like the subs bench, you could see Scott Arfield sat right next to Stephen Defoe. Stephen Defoe, he's like actually celebrating. He's going like mad for the fact that he scored. And Scott Arfield just sat down, probably retired, yeah. But he was like, he does have passion for the club.
That's really interesting, actually.
I think it's just a matter of, it's just a very large transition to him. You're going from Belgium and Anderlecht to Burnley.
It's the first time he's played for a club that's towards the bottom of the league. He's used to being at clubs that are fighting for titles.
So I don't know where could he go, though. Where can he go? Because he wants to play in Belgium National League. Martinez has made it clear that you have to play top-level football to get in. So people saying he's going to go to China for the money. If he goes to China, there's no way in hell he can go into Chinese national team.
He could probably go back to Belgium. I think that's probably most likely. One last point on the game that I wanted to make, Natalie. Good spirit again to battle back and get the equaliser, but as we've seen quite a lot this season, just seemed to switch off then and concede another pretty sloppy goal at the end that cost them a point in the end.
Yeah, I keep changing my mind about the second goal, and I don't know whether or not it's a result of them just switching off and not being particularly focused on the game, especially as they'd not done particularly well in that second half. And I think they just, you know, they just lack that discipline of a match intensity that mattered, not one that was an end of season play out. Or the second option as to whether or not it is some defensive frailties trying to bed in a new centre-half partnership. I'm not entirely convinced yet about the success of, I guess, Long and Tarkowski as a sound back pairing. I'm not entirely sure yet. Now, that's really harsh to say that, so I'm going to be very clear here, listeners, that I'm not saying that we've got a terrible defense now because of this. But in both the games against West Brom and against Bournemouth that we've played without Ben Mee and Michael Keane, we have looked uncharacteristically weak in defense. We haven't looked as organized as we have done. We haven't looked as solid in that bank of back four as we have done. Now, Keane and me took time to bed in there, so it's probably, like I say, it is unfair to judge them after just two games and expecting two players who've hardly played all season to come in and suddenly be Keane and me's capabilities. But I do think that if Keane does go in the summer, which is what is widely expected, actually there is some rumours as well that me's going to go as well. I'm not entirely sure that they're founded yet. But for me, I just don't think that it is an automatic assumption that we can rely on Tarkowski, me and Long as being defensively as capable as having Keane in there. I do think we have to invest. So, the second goal, as disappointing as it was, I don't know whether it was, like you say, lack of concentration for the on-the-beach belief that these players have got with nothing to play for, or it was a defensive frailties, especially with Tarkowski being at fault for the second. Maybe it's a combination of both, but I don't know if we're going to get an awful lot of, benefit from trying to analyse that now. If it was halfway through the season and we had everything to play for, I think we'd get more analysis out of that, but it's probably irrelevant as to which one of those it is, because it's an end of season play out, to be honest.
Yeah, I think Tarkowski and Long have both done okay in the circumstances, but we've conceded four goals in the two games, and they've all been quite a the first Bournemouth goal was a really good ball and a good finish, but Stephen Ward gets completely caught out by a long ball. It just shouldn't happen. It's sloppy defending, I think, and unavoidable. But like you say, with so little to play for, it's understandable that they'd maybe switch off. Liam, what's your view on this? Tarkowski seems to have been groomed to replace Michael Keane, who we all assume is going to go. Do you think Tarkowski would be a solid enough replacement for Keane? Would you rather us buy someone as a direct replacement? There's been a lot of talk about Ben Gibson and Harry Maguire from clubs that have been relegated as possibly being snapped up. Do you think they'd maybe be options?
I would say that if you give Tarkowski more game time, getting into use of Premier League, because I remember that before, like, Keane got his injury and all that, that when he was playing every cup, everyone was like, oh my god, Tarkowski's like, he's so good, he's next this, next that. And like, you know, everyone was so hyped up Tarkowski, like, in the FA Cup game, stuff like that. And I think he's still quality. I think give him about, you know, 5-10 Premier League games, get used to the league, because he's still very new to it. That's like, what, his third, fourth, like, start, isn't it? That's the second start, isn't it, in the Premier League? It's all that. Give him some more game time. I think that he's absolutely class in terms of his ball playing.
Started the last three, I think. Me missed one, didn't he? And then Keane's missed the last two. I think he started the last three. But yeah,
I think he's done quite well getting introduced to the team, so far in the Premier League. I know he's had his sub appearances and all that, but still, he's coming out at the end of the game when the other team's tired and all that. I think even more game time, I think it'll be a very decent replacement. We still need to do this. We do need to sign another centre back though, because I'm just not confident with Kevin Long. Maybe it's just I'm being unfair on him that he hasn't had his chance yet, but I just can't see him being Premier League quality. I just can't imagine it. So we do need to sign another centre back as a replacement for either me or Tarkowski gets injured, or if me could even go. If he goes, then I'd be shocked if Ben Mee goes. I can't see him leaving, honestly. I'd be devastated.
Yeah, me too.
I think the new centre-backs are mostly, it's just a question of whether they play with Ben Mee or Tarkowski, or whether it's me and Tarkowski as the pairing. We'll move on from the Bournemouth game now, though. Burnley's safety was finally mathematically certain on Sunday, thanks to Hull's crushing defeat at Crystal Palace. And we keep using this term mathematically because it's been pretty much certain since the Palace win, Natalie, but it's great to finally have it totally done. And if Hull had won on Sunday, there'd have still been Burnley fans worried next week about the possibility of a 15-goal swing or whatever.
We absolutely did. We had a great moment last night actually at the Player of the Year Awards, where it was the gentleman who does the who's the Safe Style UK comedian who does the
Jeff
tours.
Ryan. Thank you.
Yes, Jeff, I'm very sorry. I forgot your name for a brief moment then, so I put myself under pressure. He was doing the auction and he was doing his own unique end of season review. And one of the things he said to the players, which was absolutely hilarious, he said, look, lads, he said, I'm really sorry. This section's not about you. It's about us. And he said, this is what it means to be a Burnley fan. He said, most Burnley fans genuinely believed that Hull would get those 19 goals, and the whole room just absolutely burst out laughing because everyone was just kind of sheepishly looking. Like Dyche was rolling his eyes like, oh come on, and everyone was like, no, we really were. Most of us genuinely thought that somehow Hull were going to claw back a 20 goal deficit and we would still end up going down. I even bizarrely saw, and I'm sure caveat to this, it was very tongue-in-cheek, but I also saw a tweet in the morning that basically said, I had it like it was something like I had a dream last night, or I've had a worry that somehow we end up with a 6-point deduction for something that's gone wrong, and Hull win their last game and we still end up going down. I was like, that is the Burnley fan way. But no, it was absolutely, it would have been, it was a delight to finally get confirmed mathematical safety yesterday. Slightly disappointed that Hull didn't really put up a better fight than they did, to be honest. And it would have been very nice for us to get at least a point out of the Bournemouth game and actually secure our survival ourselves. But that's just been ridiculously greedy. As Dyche would say, it doesn't really matter where the points come from in the season. It doesn't really matter where the results come from. It's where you finish at the end of the season that counts. And we have achieved it. We've done what we said we were going to do. And it's been actually, apart from a slight wobble around the time that Swansea were playing Spurs, remember that Tuesday night where I think Middlesbrough won and Hull won and Swansea had that
late goals, weren't they? Yes. Went against us.
And then it looked like our lead had been cut from 12 points to 2, and we were all having there was still like 7 or 8 games left by then, so it wasn't the case of games right now. So apart from that wobble until we won a game and got ourselves back comfortable again, Burnley have been comfortable all season. We've never, apart from, I didn't realise this till last night, but apart from the first game of the season after the Swansea defeat, we've not been in the bottom three once.
I've said that a lot recently, hasn't
What he? A stat. What a stat that is.
Yeah, it's incredible considering that for the first two seasons, we've spent the entire seasons trying to claw our way out of relegation. We didn't go into it the whole season. That's incredible. And the boys, I think for me, just didn't, they didn't panic. They didn't worry. They didn't really think about relegation. They were incredibly positive. But at the same time, they were very, I guess they were almost dismissive about relegation. Like there was such a self-belief in this team. Even from early on in the season, they were all saying, well, we're going to stay up this year. We're looking as high at the table as we can. We're not looking behind us. We're looking at trying to finish in the top half of the table. And I think that's been a real difference this year. But it certainly feels very, very nice, I've got to say.
Yeah, one last point on this, Liam. Obviously, Hull and Middlesbrough have been relegated back to the Championship, so that just demonstrates the achievement, doesn't it, that Burnley have managed this season for us to stay up, the only one of the three promoted teams to be able to to stay up when Hull and Borough have gone down with games to spare.
Yeah. I've said this before, actually, and I do genuinely believe this, in that if you have a look over the history of the Premier League, it does make a massive difference if you win the league. I think you just are a stronger side coming up to the division. There's a winning ethic and there's a winning mentality among the players. And it doesn't surprise me that the one season that we stayed up was the season that we won the Championship, because I just think I'm not saying that it's some kind of automatic right. I'm just saying there's a correlation between the success in the Championship, because you are that good a side and you're good enough to win the Championship. You're too good for that side. And you've got that Championship mentality. Sorry, that champion mentality, and I think it does make a difference amongst the ones who came runners up or the ones who came through the playoffs.
I think it's also a matter of experience as well, that Sean Dyche has only had one full year in the Premier League. I think that compared to Hull and Borough, they haven't really got any experience really in the Premier League, like the manager wise like they sat Mark Hughes and
the players
there's some Hull players
that
are still in the club.
Squad is the same as it was 2 years ago as well.
Yeah, it's a matter of experience in that you know what to do, you know what to expect, you know what to achieve to get to a certain level of your game. And not going to lie, like, at the start of the season, we all know that Borough, they were seen as a team that was supposed to, like, be doing what we're doing now and, like, you know, sort of doing well all year and not really be seen as relegation candidates, all that. And everyone thought that we were going to go up straight back down. But that's just the Burnley way, isn't it? You know, we are, for achievements that we have done this year, that is, it's ridiculous of how... I think people are now getting used to us being the Premier League side, but I still see us as a championship side. We're a championship club. That's what I've been raised as seeing us ourselves as. And I'm now slowly starting to transition to actually like, yeah, we're a Premier League club now. So like, it's getting to that weird stage that I want to believe, but it's like, I'm like, oh, if we're going in next year, it's like, oh, well, that's expected. So like, I don't know how to feel. It's like, it's so incredible how well we've actually done this year. And the most weirdest part is, we've only won one game away. And we're somehow not been in relegation zone the entire season. What is that? I hope that we do at least, you know, go double next year and win two games away. You know, that's my
next year. Small target. Try and win two small games target. Away from home.
Come on, double that. Come on, lads. I hope so for my sake, because I've travelled so long from Newcastle, man. And just to see, like,
so well.
10 goals something like that the entire season. So ridiculous.
For those of you who've not been following his YouTube videos, he has these absolute epic vlogs every single week of his ridiculous journeys on 40 million coaches up and down the country. This lad has put an absolute shift in this season, and he is an absolute credit to all the and he really embodies for me all the travelling Clarets fans who've gone all the way this season and seen just one win and four draws, and I just think, you know what, I'd take my hat off to you, sir. I think you've done an incredible job. Well done.
I think I'm just a moron, in honesty. I think it's just you can say like, oh yeah, credit to the club. I think it's just me just being stupid. Honestly, don't know what to expect. Yeah, you know what, Chelsea away. Yeah, we could beat them. Yes,
I love it.
To be fair, the only game this year away that I had absolutely no hope was Palace away. I was thinking, well, it's Palace, they're good side, they got Ben Taker, they got Zaha. No, like you can see in the vlog and stuff like that where people's like, oh, you're gonna do well. It's like, no, we're gonna lose 5-0. She's like, that's generally my reaction, and then that's a game that we won. So I need to bring that mentality next year.
The reverse psychology from
this. It's been working for me all the season, mate.
It's incredible.
It won us the championship title last year, and it's got us Premier League survival this year. Get on board. It's a beautiful thing.
We'll come on to reverse psychology and predictions towards the end of the podcast, but shall we do Tweet of the Week now? Over to Natalie for Tweet of the Week.
Tweet of the Week. Tweet of the Week. Tweet of the Week. Tweet of the Week. Tweet of the week, tweet of the week, tweet of the week.
Indeed. This week's tweet of the week was very, very difficult to choose because there was that absolutely wonderful, wonderful Sunday where we were all following the end of the championship season, and there was an incredibly tense last 10 minutes of regular time and an unbelievable 6 minutes away at Birmingham where the timeline was just absolutely crazy of nervous fans just wanting to see our neighbours down the road in League One, which then followed a beautiful timeline all the way through of just people having a fantastic laugh at the expense of our neighbours. So I really, really struggled that week to decide which one to go on. What we've done instead, we decided that as much as we'd like to gloat with our neighbours and put them firmly back in their place, this is about us. This is about celebrating what we've done this season, not laughing at what they've failed to do. So I'm not going to give the Venkies relegation party or Jelly and Ice Cream Day any further coverage than what it's already had. I'm going to concentrate on the Clarets and what they've achieved. And this week's Tweet of the Week comes from Harry Nelson, who just simply says, "And that, ladies and gentlemen, is that. The adventure continues. Hashtag staying up." So thank you very much, Harry Nelson. That won this week's Tweet of the Week.
Particularly sweet, I'm sure, for us to essentially... although not quite mathematically, that word again, stay up on the same weekend that the Rovers were relegated. We've been few weekends
so
like
beautiful
that in the history of Burnley Football Club again. And I don't know if people are going to be that bothered about following Rovers results next season, because they might actually do quite well for a change, but it's certainly going to be entertaining watching them play dross teams while we're going to Chelsea and Man United and all the big boys. So yeah, a lot of good times enjoyed, I'm sure, off the back of Rovers' relegation. Last week, If you've been paying close attention, Natalie's mentioned a couple of times that she was at the Player of the Year Awards.
I don't like to brag too much.
Sunday night.
Not jealous at all.
Indeed. You know, I like to keep these things pretty low key. I don't like to brag about which is a blatant lie for anybody
sending,
to listen
like,
to.
A million tweets. Exactly.
I was incredibly lucky last night to be invited to the Player of the Year Awards, and I also managed, I'm not really sure how I managed to pull this off, but I also managed to bag seats in the platinum area, and I was sat right next to Sean Dyche and the squad as well. Listeners, you'll be very pleased to hear that I haven't woken up this morning with a restraining order against me. I did manage to keep a good controlled distance away from Sam Vokes, which was an achievement in itself. I did go and speak to him a little bit. I told him he had to take Michael Keane and lock him in a drawer until the end of summer, which he promised me he would do. He said that he was going to take it upon himself to hide Michael Keane. So Sam Vokes, if you're listening to this podcast, which I'm sure you do, but obviously, you've got to, I don't care how many bottles of beer you'd had last night, you've got to keep that promise, and I'll be watching into the season. But do you know what? It was a fantastic event. It was the largest dinner that they've held at Turf Moor. The commercial team managed to sell 754 tickets, which was an absolute capacity. And they put up a brand new marquee in the outside of the opposite to the James Hargreaves stand. It was just decorated incredibly well. There was just, the food was fantastic. The drinks were fantastic. And Daz Bentley and his team put on a really good show. There's quite a few of our listeners who were there as well, who I've seen tweets this morning. They put on a fantastic end of season review, which really just gave you goosebumps all the way through it. We had some really fun games where the players had done some. Do you know the trick where you run around your head around the broom and you're trying to
No. Say
that was hilarious. So we all had to decide whether there was a hit or a miss there. We had to do. They'd also recorded some videos about speeds of penalties, and you had to guess whether it was higher and lower. It was so interactive and it was so much fun. And then the main thing for me was there was just no ego there. And I said, this is such a humble brag post, but when I was chatting to Sean Dyche at the end of the thing, I did say to him, I bet you...
Massive name drop.
You can almost hear that, like, in Burnley down the road. I did say to him that, this is very true, I didn't believe that there's any other Premier League sides that will hold an event like they did last night. For a good 2 hours after the awards had finished, the players just got off the chairs, and just, they could just be your mate next door. They just mingled all the fans, took as many pictures as you wanted, signed everything that was put in front of them, were having beers with all the fans. They took a load of fans into town afterwards and carried on. And it was just like, there was just zero ego there. And they just let the hair down and just gave fans an opportunity to hang out with them for the night. And it was absolutely, it was honestly, it was amazing. I was a little bit starstruck at sometimes. I just keep sat there and I was like Tarkowski was just like sat next to me, and I was just like, oh my god, you know, it was like a bit of a fangirl moment. But it was very, very good. And the awards themselves, I don't think particularly went away from what we expected. I know, Jamie, you've got some thoughts on the Player of the Year. I think you would have preferred it to be Keane than Heaton, but I think it was a pretty close call. I'm sure those of you will look on the club website for a summary of the event and a recap of everything that happened. But it certainly was a really great night. And if any of you have the opportunity to go next year, I strongly recommend it. It was a really, really good event, and I loved it.
For the last 5 minutes, you literally just said my entire dream night in just generally I would cry of happiness of that. Like,
I nearly did, to be honest. Like,
I'm literally just serious, like, oh, come on. Like, oh, that's like a dream night for me. Seriously, I could die happy after that.
It really is. I'm just not cool at all. I'm not one of those persons that you, like, there were so many people who were like, yeah, whatever, like, you know, Sean Dyche, yeah, whatever, like, playing it really cool. I was just like, oh my god, like, running around like, ah! And like, just stood there, like, on the spot.
I wasn't going to bring this up. I noticed you referred to him as God a couple of times. Can you remember what happened the last time we started doing that to one of our managers?
Oh, god.
I was a little bit concerned.
Do you know what?
I think it's a good road to go down.
No, I completely agree. I've completely not picked up on that at all. And I did call him God twice.
Yeah.
Last night on social media. Oh no, what am I gonna do? It's reverse psychology, Jamie, it's fine.
Go and delete.
It's not gonna happen again. That pass not gonna happen again because Oh my god. Now I'm gonna be panicking for the rest of the night about what I've done. I was pretty cool with Sam, I've gotta say. I was pretty cool. I didn't turn into some blithering idiot where I was like, I did have a coherent conversation
was
with
Mr.
him.
Was Mr. B there, though? Was Mr. B, like, watching?
No, it wasn't. He wasn't. I kind of sneaked around and went, I'm just going over here, bye. And I came back with this picture in my hand of me and Sam, and he just, like, rolled his eyes at me and was just like, whatever. Brilliant. I can't compete with Sam Vokes tonight, so
right.
I'm sorry.
Did he not recognise you? Did he not recognise you?
He didn't, which I'm kind of... What? That's just rude. Do you know what I mean? It's like...
Even off the telly.
I know, although I have to say, and this is going to be my last brag post of the day, it was really nice actually that we did have quite a few known and ever listeners came up and speak to me last night who did pass on messages of how much they've been enjoying this season's recap. So thank you to everybody again who supported us this season, and thank you for everybody who came up and said hello last night and gave us some really good feedback. We always welcome comments and suggestions, as Jamie always says at the end of the podcast, so it's really nice to have conversations with people in real life and get your thoughts and comments on the podcast. So certainly some of the couple of conversations I had last night, we've taken on board some of your comments. So it was nice to have that.
Yeah, one point on the awards themselves, Liam. Last week at our live event, we did a vote for our player of the year. Michael Keane beat Tom Heaton. It was reversed last night. Tom Heaton won the club player of the year and Michael Keane won players player of the year. Do you agree that those two are the front runners, and who'd get your vote?
Obviously, last night, that's how I put it as. I put it as Tommy to play the season and Keane as players play the season. I can't imagine anyone else other than those two that could possibly compete for it. I just can't imagine it. Tom Heaton is the reason why we stayed up this year, in my opinion. I believe that he has made some ridiculous... And just the fact that he's that good, that it makes the defence more confident, saying that, oh, well, we kind of allowed him to have a shot on us and stuff like that, so they're not as tense. I feel like if we didn't have Heaton this year, we had, let's say... Lee Grant still in goalkeeper for us, then I think that we would have gone down this year. I think just to show confidence that he brings to the club and to the defenders, I think that he's been massively helpful for us. Keane as well, of course. Like Keane is so good. But the thing is, with Keane, that I see Ben Mee as almost just as good as Keane. I think that Keane is a bit better composure-wise, but in terms of pure defending, getting your head in the way, interceptions, all that, Mee's just been just as good as Keane this year. So... Yeah, he's gone so under the radar, but yeah, I agree with those voting last night. Yeah, most definitely.
I think we saw on the stat pack that we had at the live event last week that Dave Roberts put together for us. Me and Keane are pretty much locked together on a lot of the key data, like tackles, headers, interceptions, blocks, all those sorts of things. There's very little between them. So you're absolutely right. Pure defending, the basics, very little between them. I think Keane's maybe just a bit classier, better on the ball. Obviously, he's got the England recognition, so those things count in his favour. One more thing on awards. Tom Heaton also won the Save of the Season award, apparently, on Match of the Day 2 for the incredible star jump. Remember Rick's artwork from that episode at Man United when he somehow denies Zlatan Ibrahimovic even from about a yard out. So we need to mention that one as well.
It's been quite a good year, hasn't it?
I'm not used to all these accolades coming Burnley's way. Sorry for interrupting you there, Jamie. I was just going to nip in on Liam's point there on Ben Mee and the impression how impressed he's been with him this season. Last night the players recorded their own players player of the year prediction, so you could see how everybody voted, and Ben Mee was a very close second. Like, a lot of his teammates really? Had voted for Ben Mee. The
Did
top
me
three
Keane
were
vote for each other.
Yes. Obviously.
That makes sense. So.
Yeah, Tom went for Keane, and I'm pretty sure that the other two defenders went for Ben Mee as well. I think a lot of the outfield, like the further, like midfield and forwards voted for Keane, but it was very, very close. Heaton, I think, came just by. In fact, there probably wasn't that much between Keane, Heaton and Ben Mee, but from my counting, because at one point I thought Ben Mee had won it, I think they were very, very close. So yeah, just picking up on what Liam said, I thought that was really interesting.
If Ben Mee came from Manchester United Academy, I guarantee that he'd be in the England squad. That's what I'm saying right now.
I genuinely think
that if he came from an academy with Paul Pogba, if Ben Mee did that as well, then he would get as much recognition as Keane.
He's got absolutely the reputation, haven't they, as building. Yes. And I think also he's got people like Rio Ferdinand who are constantly building up Michael Keane in the media, talking about how he's one of the best young players in the country and all this stuff. So I think Keane's profile is a lot higher than Ben Mee's. Fans of other clubs know a lot more about Keane than they do me, but I'm sure Burnley supporters put them pretty much on a par. Another final note on awards, so much better awards this week. Sean Dyche nominated for the Premier League's Manager of the Year award. I think the other managers in the running, Conte, Pochettino, Clement and Pulis. Natalie, fantastic to see recognition for Dyche on that. I can't imagine he's going to win it because whoever wins the league always wins it.
But yeah,
just recognition for what a fantastic job he's done keeping Burnley in the Premier League, the first time the club has ever managed that.
Without a doubt. I mean, how do you possibly put that into words? And you know, Dyche has been getting the plaudits of all of the pundits all season, and the media, and everybody thinks is fantastic. His stock has certainly risen this year. I think people have just have acknowledged that it's not just the what felt like an impossible job to keep a side like Burnley in a successive season in the Premier League, but to do it so comfortably and to do it without the drama. And there's been more. There's been no major headlines coming out of Burnley. I mean, obviously, we had the tweet scandal in the early season. That's probably the only thing that's put a blemish on a really good campaign. And even then, you know, it was an individual rather than a club thing because it predated the players' involvement to the club. So other than that, you know, we've brought Joey back in and Joey's ban was handled really well. And there's just been no fuss, whereas other teams have had, you know, bad press coming from the chairmen, from the board. We're talking about fighting within players, managers getting sacked. We've just carried on quietly, and I think Dyche has manufactured that a lot himself. He's made sure that the club has handled itself in a certain way, and it's things like that that get him the awards, not just what he's done on the pitch as well. It, you know, but people pick up on things like that. It's such a media circus is the Premier League these days, and he's just doing it so quietly and so calmly and so efficiently that, you know, people, like I say, give him more respect for that than I think they would do with somebody like, you know, like, well, let's say for example, you know, Allardyce has managed to keep Palace up, but you know, there's always the fanfare that comes with Allardyce and, you know, the comments and things like that. Dyche has never done any of that.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. The couple of mini scandals that we've had, the Joey's gambling thing and Andre's tweets, Dyche handled them perfectly. No, like, kicking off about it, being honest about his view, but not making a big drama out of it, not making it look like it's a conspiracy against Burnley, that I'm sure some supporters think it maybe was.
On topic of manager year was, can someone let me know when the championship winds up? Because I really would want to vote Owen Coyle as manager of the year next year. For this year. So let me know when that's up, because I'll make sure to vote for that.
It is a public vote, though, for the Premier League one, though. We'll put the link in the show notes. I'm sure everyone will want to vote for Sean Dyche. And give him a good chance of getting up there. But yeah, I think he's getting a lot more plaudits in the last few weeks. It's become more obvious that Burnley are going to stay up. People have noticed the job that he's done without spending an absolute fortune, even though we've had so much talent sat on the bench the last few games. I think one of the exciting things for me, Liam, about Dyche is that there's still progress to be made. I think we've talked about the away form, and that's an obvious issue. But there's players like Brady, Gudmundsson, who've not been in the team. Andre Gray's not been in the team this season. There's surely more to come from this team and from Dyche. Do you think we could go even further next year?
Well, put it this way, we've had like most of our like money on the bench this year than in the actual starting 11. Like most of our like from our transfers and all that. It's ridiculous. There's still a lot more that we can achieve. I believe that probably like I don't know. It's hard to say. I think that if we want to look at our transfers this year, I think our transfers has been exceptional compared to what they used to be. Like, you know, we signed Djukovic as like and Sordell for striker partnerships in the Premier League last time. So put that in perspective, it's been quite good. Brady, I think that there's a lot more to come from next year. Gummerson, I cannot wait to see him. Defoe, I think there's a chance he could still stay if he wants to actually play in Belgian league, but they probably go back to Belgium, so I don't know about that. But there's still a lot more to achieve. I think that if we had a few more away wins this year, we could easily be in top half. It's going to be a very, very exciting year for Burnley, because if we still begin next year, then that could be a really, really strong standpoint that we are now a Premier League club. We won't be yo-yoing in for that. So as a Burnley fan right now, we are so buzzing right now. I'm so looking forward to next year. Like, I'm not used to this. I'm used to just going up and down, but cannot wait. I cannot wait. It's so exciting.
Yeah, I'm sure everyone's going to be very interested to see what Burnley do next season. And obviously, I won't be here, but the others will be covering it on a week-by-week basis, as always. At this point, we'll have to move on to predictions. Kevin's not here this week. He's taken himself on holiday as a reward for being crowned champion last week when he was parading around the turf with his balloons. But some staggering news to report, Natalie. Now, I need to be careful that I don't fall off my chair at this.
Drum roll.
You got the result right last week. You predicted a 2-1 defeat, and we got beat 2. You got some points.
The reverse psychology has finally did not work for the team. But I think the team finally... See, that's the reason for the defeat this week. The boy said, you know what? She's helped us out all season. She's got us to that 40 points. Can we at least get her prediction right this week so she can claw back some credibility in the very, very prestigious Known and Ever Predictions League? So thank you, boys. I really appreciate that. But I did. I got my first result right this season. I predicted a 2-1 loss and it worked. So, yeah, yay.
Nobody else predicted a defeat this week, actually. So Natalie makes ground. I'll run over the table shortly. Ooh. But also, like, if you're back at the last 5 results now, you've scored more points than anyone else. You've got 5 points. 1 correct score, 2 correct results.
I just give you all more than
1 correct score, so... Natalie making progress right at the end of the season. And what it means for the table, Kevin has obviously already won. His name is in gold on our predictions table. I'm now securing second. I can't finish any higher or lower. But it does mean that Natalie's closed the gap on James to a single point. So it's all to play for. There might be nothing to play for on
this
the pitch.
Is so exciting.
All to play for in the predictions league. Now, James and Kevin aren't with us on the podcast. They're going to have to send theirs in and Adam will edit them into the podcast. But... Natalie, you get to go first. What are you going to do?
Oh, precious!
I know, this is horrendous.
Because the reverse psychology worked last week. For once.
Well, the problem is that I really don't think that we are going to lose. So I think, and it doesn't really, it genuinely doesn't matter now. We've got nothing to play for. So the boys don't need my help on the pitch. As much as I'd love us to sign off that game with a win, we don't need to. It's absolutely fine. It's, you know, it's only worth a small match of a couple of million quid if we, you know, go up a place. But hey, you know.
Small matter of a million quid. Did she just say that?
It's 2 million.
2 million quid.
Give me a small matter of a million quid, please. Thank you. I appreciate that.
No biggie, but whatever. But so the boys don't need my help. So I think I'm going to have to, just the look on Birdie's face if he ends up coming last and has to do the forfeit. And
you've got to think tactically as well, hey, Natalie.
I know.
You know for a fact that James is going to predict a win because he always predicts a win. And if you predict the same score as James,
I can't win.
You don't know his prediction, he's not going to know yours. But if you predict the same score like me and Kev did the other week, it means that you can't get ahead of him.
Yeah, this is really hard, listeners, because
tactically.
James is away, so he's going to record separately. So we are recording this podcast, I don't know what his prediction is going to be. But yes, you're right, he is going to predict a win. So I have to predict the correct score to get 3 points, or at least hang on a minute. Point's not enough for me, is it?
No, you'd be level if you got a point.
Yeah, I've got to get the right score.
Oh, no.
I'm going to predict that Burnley will win 1-0. 1-0. Oh, God, help
this
me.
Incredibly tense. So we'll edit in Kev and James's predictions. Liam, you can give us a prediction since you're our guest this week.
I think that, to be fair, like, I originally thought it would be 1-0. Like, Burnley and 1-0 victories at home just seem to go hand in hand together. So... I'm gonna, if Natty's gonna win it, I'm gonna win it with her, so I'm gonna win that as well. I can take some credit for that.
That's just made my entire Known and Ever season. Thanks, Liam.
Lovely stuff. I think we're gonna win as well, having watched West Ham being absolutely atrocious on Sunday at home to Liverpool. I'm gonna go 2-0, so that's gonna be mine, and we'll stick in Kev and James's predictions right here.
Hi, it's Kevin. Sorry I can't be there. I'm away celebrating my incredible, fantastic, remarkable, brilliant win in the Predictions League this season. The West Ham game is going to be a celebration of survival, a celebration of a fantastic Premier League season. I think it will progress at a slow, steady pace for the first hour or so. Dash will bring on Goodmanson, Brady and Gray, and we'll score 2 in the last 15 minutes to win 2-0.
Hi, Editor Adam here. James is too busy in Paris gallivanting around, but he's let us know that he predicts 2-1 to Burnley, so he's gone for a win as well.
Unfortunately, we can't respond to those because we don't know what they are. We'll talk a bit about the West Ham game before we round off the show for this week. Natalie, like we keep saying, there's nothing to play for now, but how great would it be for us to put on a bit of a show for the fans, the long-suffering fans who've been away from home all season since us winning one game? You know what I'd love to see? I'd love us to put some of the creative players maybe in the team.
Yes.
Try and score some goals.
My God, that would be nice, wouldn't it? I think... There is so many reasons for Dyche to just throw caution to the wind this game and play some of the players who he's maybe wants to give them a chance. Players like Brady, for example, should be starting at home just because he's been quite critical of them not being quite right yet, and he's obviously needs Brady to bed into this side and to get used to Premier League life. Well, he's not going to do that unless he plays. So an end of season showdown with West Ham side at home where we've not played is
for
perfect.
For me, Brady should have been starting after the Palace game. But
yeah, I agree completely, but that's fine. But then saying that, at the same time, and again, this might be a bit harsh, but if let's assume that Dyche is thinking that Boyd and Arfield do need upgrading next season, I strongly believe that he'll keep, unless Newcastle come in for the big money move for Boyd, I genuinely believe that they will continue with a squad of squad players and they'll be used in certain games. But if Dyche has a plan that say Brady Goodmunson or any other wingers he brings in will replace them, then the man manager in Dyche will probably play Arfield and Boyd to give them one last appearance, another appearance fee, allow them to play in the Premier League before next season when they might not feature. That wouldn't surprise me either, because Dyche is like that. He does like to play his players. So as a reward for their hard work for the last two seasons and for what they've done this season and getting us over the line, it wouldn't surprise me that either. So likewise, I wouldn't be surprised if young Danny Agger gets a game.
I would love that.
Yeah, I would as well. I can see arguments for both. My view is, I agree with you, Jamie. I think he has to just play some of the players who haven't been playing yet. I would love to see Defoe before he leaves. I would love to see Brady Goodmunson, all these creative players. And let's put on a real show for these fans and let's celebrate Premier League survival. We're going to be a Premier League team again next season. And let's go out with a bang. And the one thing that everybody will take from this season has been our home form. So let's not go out on a defeat. Let's do it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Someone else in... I think, again, everyone assumes he's going to leave is Michael Keane. Liam, not much of a surprise that he's developed a mystery injury that's kept him out the last two games. Do you think he's going to make a magical recovery and be able to say goodbye at the Surf on Sunday?
I don't think you're going to risk it. I don't think you're going to risk that.
Would he not just be on the bench and come on right at the end like Duff did at Charlton last season?
But that almost be like confirming that he's going to leave.
That's true. That is true.
That'd be like confirming that he's going to leave. I'm not too sure. Like, he'd be on the pitch after for the lap of honour and stuff like that. But if that does happen, that's like confirmation he's going to leave. The one change I want to make is that I just want to see Defoe in centre mid. Because, put it this way, I think you guys probably know this. The one time that he started centre mid, well, the last time he started centre mid, we won 4-1. So, like... I want to go all out, look at the 2-4-4 formation. People saying, why not play Arfield and Boyd? Why not play both? Why not play Arfield, Boyd, and then Brady and Goodmunson on top? That's my aim. So 2-4-4 formation.
How many players are you planning to put on this pitch on Sunday?
Yeah, 2-4-4.
Four wingers.
Four wingers with Gray and Adji on top. All happy days.
I was genuinely trying to, like, my maths wasn't going quick enough. I was like, hang on, is he suggesting we need like 15 first teamers? Why not? Let's go for it.
People quite often
we need to see Tarkowski and big Kevin Long at back. That's all we need.
People quite often say when people make slightly left field tactical suggestions, they say, I've been playing too much Football Manager. I think Viz has been playing a bit too much FIFA.
For sure.
He wants to play a 2-4-4.
Yo, don't have a goal on me when it works and we won 10-0. I saw that defending against Liverpool. Anything can happen.
Anything can happen. I think that's as good a place as anywhere to leave it for this week's podcast. Thanks to everyone who's listened all season. We'll be back next week, of course, to round off the season as a whole and review West Ham and do various awards and stuff as well, I'm sure. As I mentioned earlier in the show, slightly shorter podcast than usual this week, but we do have a bonus episode coming up in the next few days. As part of our Kickstarter that was a few months ago now, we promised to do an interview with a club legend, and I did that recently, speaking to former Claret's captain Stephen Caldwell. focusing in particular on Burnley's promotion to the Premier League under Owen Coyle, a season I'm sure people remember very fondly indeed. Catching up with Stephen to find out what he's been up to since and his plans for the future. That should be online in the next few days, so look out for that. I think Adam's going to edit this week's podcast, so thanks to Adam. Thanks also to our charity partners at Claret and Brew. Their website is claretandbrew.org. They do lots of good work supporting people with mental health issues who are Burnley fans. Please do check out their website. And thanks also to Rick, who does our artwork. A couple of other pieces of housekeeping. You can always get in touch with us via Twitter at nonenever.net. You can email us podcast@nonenever.net. And you can also like us on Facebook with facebook.com/nonenever.net. I know the guys are going to do a lot more work on interactivity on Facebook. You've already seen, if you like us on Facebook, there's various questions that you can get involved with there, so that's all to look forward to next season. But that's it for this week. Thanks to Natalie and Liam who've joined me. I've been Jamie Smith. This has been the No Never podcast. Bye for now.
See what
I think. I should put my name down as new host. Just you're the new rebrand. That'd be a sick.
You're jumping me graves quick. Well, I'm not even dead yet.
We've lost. James, like, hi.
What
are you trying to say? None of my starstruckness from last night competes. So I was like, the first time I met Jamie Smith in person, I was like,
you are the Jamie Smith. You're not Jamie Smith. You're the Jamie Smith.
He's the Jamie Smith.
This is all great material for the outtakes.